At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of DashPass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Thank you, Megan, and you're welcome to stay in here and listen to the Garden Hotline if you choose to. This is the second hour of the Garden Hotline, and I'll be giving the trip of the trail shortly. But right now, you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your questions, concerns, or comments. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show. Give a call. We can talk about plant material, the ups and downs all around related to annuals, bulbs, edibles, ground covers, houseplants, lawn, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is certainly not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered as an option for you to consider. Greg is still in here producing, and Megan's staying in the studio. Thank you, Megan. She's clapping. Yes, thanks. Thanks, Megan. But anyway, during the week, I do something I call a walk and talk, which is a landscape consultation. I come to your home and we can discuss whatever's going on, you know, from a list that you've generated or created. Or, and I will also keep my eyes and ears open for something that might be impacting your landscape. Maybe not major yet, but catching it before it becomes major, that could be certainly something to help you. And it could be major and you're just not even conscious of it, because the outdoors is very, very difficult here. We're in that transitional zone where north meets south, and boy, oh boy, some plant material does great for X amount of period of time, years, and then all of a sudden we've got a little bit of change in the weather, and oh, gosh darn it. But anyway, so you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and that's my homepage. That's where my email address and phone number is, and you can contact me, and we can set up a time to do a walk and talk. As I said in the first hour, I'm headed to Edwardsville after the show today. Type of the trial is a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trial again goes out to this time of year. I mean, it's kind of boring outside, but a place where it's not boring related to plant material, obviously the Botanical Garden is one, but also these various garden clubs and plant societies and things like that. I mean, it's just fantastic, the information that they all share with you, photographs of their own yards and other places as well. So like the Mid-America Regional Lily Society, the Mid-Illinois Iris Society, the Mississippi Valley Garden Club, the Newtown Garden Club, which is in St. Charles, and the O'Fallon Garden Club, O'Fallon, Missouri, and then there's also an O'Fallon Garden Club in Illinois, too. So that just shows you the diversity of the plant material and the plant societies, and where, I mean, they're just kind of fun to sit in on. Even if they use, I don't know, I'm not interested in iris, or I'm not interested in lilies, or I'm not, but you might be. It's just, you know, go and attend one meeting and see what you think. You could be surprised. Something could be, all of a sudden a light comes on and you say, wow, that's really something I remember from way back when, or that's something I've never even seen before, and now I can get some great information related to that. So again, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. After this break, we're going to be talking with Craig, Nancy, Ann, and Joe. So, Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline.
See you real soon.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, to the phones we go, and Dave lives in De Pere. Hi, Dave. How are you today?
Good morning, Michael. This is Audubon Dave. How are you doing?
Very good. How are you? Whoa, Audubon Dave.
Yeah.
Well, great.
Got a quick question for you. When I do my grassy planting this spring, it'll probably be after I put down my crabgrass preventer and fertilizer. Would that bother the grass seed at all?
Yep, it certainly will. That'll make it so none of your grass seed will germinate. You know, so you got to kind of choose one or the other.
Okay.
So how's retirement? Dave used to be wonderful. The pharmacist where we always go, you know, there at the Walgreens at Holly Hills and Gravois Avenue.
That's right. That's right. How's the neighborhood?
Very good. We enjoy it a lot. I miss you.
I can answer that guy's hummingbird question.
Okay, go ahead.
You're right. They usually show up about, you know, middle of April. And you can put the feeders out, and just the ratio is 4-to-1 water to sugar.
Ah.
And don't use the red-colored water. That's not supposed to be good for the hummingbirds.
Really?
But, I don't know why, but it's not supposed to be good. So that, you know, that should help that guy out.
Wow, perfect. Well, thanks for the great insight. And I mean, who better to do that than you? I mean, Dave goes all over the world to look at birds. I mean, I don't know how many birds you have on your Audubon list, but I'm sure it's substantial.
Yeah, I haven't counted them lately. I don't know. But listen, hey, say hi to Tracy for me.
I will certainly do that. Thanks, Dave.
All right, see you later.
Yep, thanks. Yeah, I knew Dave from long ago, and all of a sudden when we moved from Soulard to South St. Louis, he was the pharmacist at the Walgreens we went to. Craig lives in Dardenne Prairie. Hi, Craig. How are you?
Morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Just wanted to comment also on the hummingbird food that the gentleman called in about.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is 4 cups of water to 1 cup of sugar. And the way to do that is to put your water in a pot, put more than 4 cups in there because you're going to get evaporation.
Right.
Turn your heat on high, bring the pot to a rolling boil, no lid, boil it. Once it gets to a rolling boil, boil it for 2 minutes, turn off the heat, just let it sit until it cools down, then put your 4 cups of water into a jar or whatever you want to put it in, and your 1 cup of sugar. Then fill your feeder. What you have left, you can put in the fridge, and it'll last for 2 weeks. Do not put any red food coloring in it. That does not draw the hummingbirds.
Well, two people in a row say forget the red. So, well, that's perfect.
Right. And don't buy any of that stuff they sell at the stores, that ready-mix stuff. The sugar and water is the best thing for the hummingbirds.
So you're saying boil the water so you're actually cleaning the water before you put the sugar in it? Is that what you're doing?
Correct. That's why you don't put a lid on the pot, so all that stuff will evaporate out of the water, so you have, you know, just basic water without all the chemicals.
Right, because, I mean, tap water is... Tracy hates the tap water. She hates the taste of it. Me, I guess I'm kind of routine or mundane or whatever, so I do tap water, but she doesn't do it at all because of that taste of, from the chemicals.
Right, right. Well, this will get rid of it.
All right, well, thanks, Craig. So, folks, do not put any red coloration in your hummingbird feeders whatsoever. Two experts right in a row. So, thanks, Craig. And now let's go to Nancy, and Nancy is in Melville. Hi, Nancy.
Mike. I am no expert, so there goes your record there. But
oh no,
that's why I'm calling you.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So my question is, when can I start soil testing my garden, vegetable garden, and then my yard?
As soon as the ground is not frozen, and you can get soil samples.
Okay.
So I mean, you're talking about taking the sample and sending it someplace, right? Not doing the test yourself.
Correct.
Okay, yeah. So as soon as you can get to the, you know, get the soil, and, you know, some of the companies, University of Missouri does it. There's a company over in Illinois in Belleville that does it. A lot of them will send you the kit, so it'll give you the bags and everything else to send back. So okay. It is really, really important. And the earlier you get it, you can really not make any type of mistakes, like maybe you've already got extravagant levels of certain chemicals or certain elements of fertilizer, so staying mm-hmm. away from that type of fertilizer completely. So this is, the earlier you get it, the better it's going to be.
So what do I do, like Google like soil sample for Belleville and see what comes up? Okay.
Yeah, I forget what the name, I think the company's name is, if you want to hold on 1 second, I think I might have it here. Let's see. It's probably, it's SGS, that's the name of the company in Belleville, and they're on Main Street.
Okay. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Yep, good luck with that. Yeah, soil testing is something I think is extremely important. So good luck, Nancy.
Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Ann, and Ann lives in De Pere. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Mike. I have a question about my ivy beds. Some of them look very healthy, like you would expect them to look in the winter. They're dark green, and others look really like they're on their last legs. They're brownish. They look like they've been frostbitten. And I'm wondering, are they going to come back, or do I have to replant in the spring? What is it supposed to look like in the wintertime?
Well, it should look like green, but the ones that you're seeing that look brown, they got scorched. Broadleaf evergreens, whether azaleas, rhododendrons, holly, or anything else, euonymus, or ivy, when we had that really severe cold spell a couple weeks ago, that really burnt a lot of the evergreens. And, you know, more so the conifers that have needles, they don't have the gentleman called about the Alberta spruce that got winter burn. But for the most part, the broadleaf evergreens are the ones that are going to be showing the damage. Now, those leaves won't come back. Now, hopefully the stems where those leaves are, or those leaves will just ultimately fall off. But where those stems are, you should get some new growth off those stems unless it was some severe cold in that spot.
Okay. Okay, great. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to know.
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, it's really kind of a difficult circumstance. But what I would plan on doing is, depending upon how large these areas are, take a couple leaves to your favorite garden center that look good so you can get a type of ivy that matches it, because you may end up having to buy a couple flats of ivy and then planting them in the existing beds to kind of compensate for the slow recovery as a result of the cold damage. So thanks, Ann. And if anybody has any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Joe lives in Hazelwood. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Mike. I've been maintaining a compost pile for the last year, and I work in a restaurant. I had the luxury of having all kinds of vegetable peels and eggshells and coffee grinds that I get tons of.
Mm-hmm.
Am I in any danger of over putting that stuff in my compost? Can I make it too rich that it would harm my soil when I mix it next year? Or am I okay in just loading it up with that stuff?
You're probably fine with that. The only thing I'd be worried about is maybe the eggshells, because of the calcium. You could get too much of the calcium in there, and that could cause some problems. You know, with roses, they like a lot of calcium. Rose food has calcium in it. But you just have to watch out, and no meat byproducts whatsoever. So it's, as long as it's, you know,
any meat or bread. But I've got a lot of vegetables that rot, and I plant mostly vegetables in the summertime, the springtime,
right?
Tomatoes and all that. I was just afraid that maybe too many coffee grinds or too much of something is going to maybe be an ill effect on the season.
Well, unless you're putting a huge amount of coffee grounds, and maybe you are, it could impact the soil pH. So that would be the only concern I'd have related to the coffee grounds.
What's a good pH for the soil?
With lawn, you basically want a slightly acidic soil, so let's say 6.8 down to about 6.0. For vegetables, you kind of want it neutral right around 7, so you kind of got to watch out.
Okay, that's good information. Yeah, I had never tested my soil yet, and I think it's going to be important I do.
Yeah, if you're really serious about growing, and I don't know if you're using your vegetables for home or if you're using them actually at work, but I would get a soil test done and find out what's going on.
Yeah, it's just a hobby for home. But,
oh, great.
Yeah, I'm at that retirement age, so it's a necessary thing. All right, Mike, thanks. I enjoy your show.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me on your show. Let's see, why don't we get... go to Alton. Wow, we haven't been to Alton for a week or two into Joseph's yard. Hi, Joseph.
Welcome.
Thank you.
First time caller.
Wow.
Here's my every year, we have one tree in our yard, but we are surrounded by trees, and we get so many leaves that I grind them up, and I like to put them all around the trees and around the foundation of the house. And I use them in my garden. I have a huge pile. But every year I like to take these and just it keeps the grass down. It keeps the moisture in. Is that a good idea or not?
It's fine. I mean, the botanical garden, they call it leaf mold, which M-O-L-D. I don't know why they call it mold as opposed to leaf mulch. But a lot of them were, just collected on the garden grounds, and they were piled down by, where the maintenance center was in huge piles. And I put a layer of, leaf mold in the woodland garden every year that I was there. I usually put about 3 or 4 inches, and then as the weather came, rain came, and everything else, then that's, they started breaking down, of course, and they compacted down. So it wasn't that deep later on. But, yeah, leaf mold is not – there's not a problem with it. The only problem that there may be is if some of these leaves had some kind of disease on them, not necessarily won't impact the plant material where you're putting them around, but it just means that disease can be around to reinfect the trees wherever these the leaves are coming from.
Yeah, it seems like it works out real well.
Great.
Grind them up and just lay them around. I have a nice thick bed, and then during the when we come to the springtime, we break them up, turn them up into the ground more, and it's I think it's a great idea. First, especially our evergreens, it just keeps the moisture in there during the hot season.
Absolutely. And what I do is I have a mulching mower, and so I rake up a lot of leaves, but a lot of them I don't. I just run the mulching mower over it, and then the leaves. I even run my mower over plant beds too before the plant material starts coming up during the dormancy, and then. If it looks too thick or too deep, then I go ahead and pull, actually some places I use a broom. I don't use a rake to get these mulch leaves out of there. And so, no, it's a great idea to do that.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, great.
Enjoy your show.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. And we should probably take a break. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. If you have questions, concerns, or comments, or information-wise, wow, we've had some great information related to hummingbirds. Don't do the red. Whoa, thanks. And Mary lives in St. Louis. How are you today, Mary?
Hi, Mike. I'm fine. How are you?
Very good.
Good, good. You were in my old neighborhood, by the way, when you were in that garden area.
Oh, really?
There used to be row houses there, and like ancient times ago, I actually grew up right around there.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But the reason I'm calling is I caught the tail end of the orchid discussion this morning, and it sounded like there's a lot of skepticism about putting ice on them. Well, I was given one of those ice only. It's called a just add ice orchid, and from my son maybe 4 or 5 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I've done to it. I have only put 3 ice cubes every Saturday morning when your show starts. It stays in a southern exposure window, and in the kitchen. So I guess it gets a fair share of moisture. And a lot of bright sun in that window, but right now it has 8 blooms on it. It comes back every January to February.
Sounds perfect.
once a year. It only blooms once a year, but that's all I've ever done is add ice. I've never changed what it's growing in or anything. And I keep wondering, how long is it going to, you know, go on? But it blooms every year.
Well, that's great. And, you know, the only concern that I had, and the gentleman who called about the ice, is if you have the surface rooting coming out on top of the bark, then laying the ice on it could damage those roots. And those roots are not really essential as far as necessarily absorbing nutrients or anything. They're more for, like, keeping the plant upright. So that was what our main concern was, just, yeah, obviously, if you've done it for all these years, you've had great success. That's why I say my, you know, advice and everything else is certainly not the only garden path to take.
Well, I am no green thumb by any means, so I always take your advice, but I just wanted to let you know that it did work. It does work in this case. So it doesn't seem to hurt them. And I do lay those cubes like right on top.
Right.
So I guess they melt slow. I don't know, but it works.
Well, that's great, Mary.
I'm looking at it right now. So.
I thank you very much for your insight because, like I said, mine is not the only garden path. So there's a great example where I was kind of anti-ice cubes. Here's somebody that's had great success with her orchids for multiple years. So let's go from Mary's yard to George, and George lives in Ophala, Missouri. Hi, George.
Morning, Mark. Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I'm going to get a jump on spring. I'm looking at starting some annuals and vegetables indoors. When would be the best time, you think, to start the seeds? And if you have any tips, yeah, I'd like to hear them.
Yeah, if you want to really start them, I would get some grow lights first.
Yeah, I got some.
Okay, so you got the grow lights. I would say probably you're not going to be able to put them out because the ground is going to be too cold. I mean, you may be able to put them out, and they may not die, but they probably won't grow. So are we talking about cool season vegetables, or are we talking about...
Yeah.
Okay, so like broccoli and cauliflower and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that and annuals, you know.
Like pansies or, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so
sunflowers, things, you know, they're growing in the summer.
Yeah, so basically what you probably should do is wait until maybe the first, I would personally wait until the 1st of March before I did the seeds and then get the potting mix for starting plant material and, you know, seed starting potting mix and do that, you know, do it that way. And just realize that, you know, the transition from you growing them, you know, to the actually getting outside and having success is going to be great fun.
Yeah. You start in early March then, probably?
Yeah, probably early March. You know, it's weather dependent, but yeah, probably early March, maybe mid-March. So they, you know, they've got a period of time. And with the cool season vegetables, it may be a little bit too late. So you might want to try some, you know, you've got, I don't know how many seeds is in the pack, but maybe do a few seeds and then wait for a week or so and then do some more seeds and then do some more seeds rather than just putting the whole pack in at once.
Okay.
And that way you can transition it and see how healthy they look. Because a lot of times, even under grow lights, you know, you want the grow lights only about 1 to 2 inches above the potting mix that they're growing in. So they can be, it can be really intense while they're small. If you don't do that, then they're going to really elongate and they're just going to flop over.
And then you harden them off, you know, right, putting them out in a little shade for a while and then kind of move them into the sun some. And
yeah, you probably don't. You may have to do that, but the sun is not all that intense that early. But yeah, that wouldn't certainly hurt. And, you know, keep them in the flat or the pot or whatever you're growing them in as long as you possibly can.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
Yeah. And now let's go to Rick. And Rick lives in Eureka. Hi, Rick.
Hey, good morning, Mike. I've got some landscaping that's got a pretty heavy white rock in the landscape. And I get an enormous amount of vines growing up from those rocks. Is there anything I can put on that to knock those vines down? Seems like the more I pull them, the more they grow.
Yeah.
Like they split, they seed and pop more vines.
Do you know if it's an annual vine or a perennial vine?
Couldn't tell you.
Okay.
They're there every year, so it must be annual. They keep coming back.
But what I would probably do is, as soon as they come up, you know, take a cutting, you know, an 8-inch or 10-inch cutting that has the foliage on it to your favorite garden center and find out, because there's two different ways you can go about doing it. If it's an annual vine, you know, that's coming back, what you can do is use a pre-emergent to put that down, and that will kill it because it's coming back from seed, kill it just as the seeds germinate. If it's a perennial vine, what you can do is take your, you know, a pair of gloves, crush the vine when they come up, just start coming up. And right after you crush it, just paint Roundup right onto the leaves where you've crushed. And that should kill it all the way down through the stems and into the root system. But it's probably, you know, something that's coming up, you know, obviously from the soil. It's not coming necessarily from the rock, I would hope.
Well, I think it's just the rock is protecting it, and it pops right up through the rock.
Right, exactly.
It's too hardy. The rock won't stop it. It comes right up through it.
Right, so you can either paint the Roundup right onto the crushed leaves, but crush the leaves because that opens up the wounds, or there's actually a sponge dabber where it's a bottle, a tube, and a sponge on the end of it, and then you can, that way you don't have to worry about the Roundup drifting onto other plant material or anything else that's there, and just dab it right onto the plants after you've stepped on them or crushed them or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks for the help.
Yeah, so pre-emergent or post-emergent. So if it's an annual vine, then you can use a pre-emergent. You might use a post-emergent too if some still come up even after putting the pre-emergent down. Let's go now from Eureka up to Florissant. And Randy, how are you today?
I'm fine, Mike. How are you doing?
Very good.
Good. I just had a question about... 3, maybe even 4 years ago now, I'm not sure exactly, but we had that fire blight disease. Well, like a lot of tree species that are susceptible to that, you know, pears and quince and
crab apples. Right.
Yeah, they all showed it real bad, you know, and now we haven't seen any evidence of that for these past several years, and I'm wondering I know that can kind of like lay dormant, sort of.
Right.
But do we have to worry about it resurfacing again?
It's usually when it's, you know, it's really, it's kind of an internal circumstance. So it just depends upon how healthy the plants are. If they've really done well, they may be able to, you know, have sloughed it off. But for the most part, usually when it gets it, it's going to be there for the life of the tree or whatever it happens to be.
Terminal.
Right.
Okay. Maybe the plants have just outgrown it.
That would be good luck.
Yeah, right. Okay. So... That's all I needed.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, Randy. And I think Randy's and I used to work at the botanical garden together. And the fire blight is, you know, it could be deadly. It just depends upon the overall health of the tree. What it does is cause problems with various aspects depending upon what type of fire blight it is. It causes defoliation of leaves, and that just, you know, means without leaves, then the plant can't be, you know, get healthy again. So you're just going to have to try and keep your fingers crossed. That's the best thing you can do. Let's go now to Denny, and Denny lives in Wildwood. Hi, Denny.
Hello, Mike. I was hoping to cut back on my ornamental grasses this weekend. Is that too early? Should I wait a little bit longer? What do you think on that?
It's probably roll the dice. I don't see anything wrong with it. The only, are they starting to shatter? Are the blades starting to break off?
Actually, at the end of last fall, when they started flopping all over, I kind of tied them up. So they're fine.
Okay.
But, and I can wait but that's what I wanted to check. I thought, it feels a little bit early because we might have some cold weather yet.
Yeah, it'd have to be pretty severe cold. You know, and hopefully we're not going to have that kind of cold, you know, from this point forward. But who knows? You could leave them till towards the end of this month if you wanted to. Or you could, if you just decide you're tired of looking at them or anything else, then you could just go ahead and cut them down. And do you know which kind you have? You have like maiden grass or fountain grass?
A little bit of both.
Okay. So with each one, you're going to cut at a different height. And then you know those spots where those blades that you've cut off, those are not going to regenerate. So you're just going to have new growth on the perimeter of the plant.
Yeah, got it. Okay, well, I'll just hold off a little bit. Thanks for the advice.
Yep, good luck with that. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you do have any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we got about 10 minutes or so to go in the show at 10 o'clock. Investing Sense with Andy Smith and Bob Richards. 11 o'clock, the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show with Scott Mosby. 1 o'clock, the Rick Edelman Show. And 3 o'clock, the Business of Family Business. There's also several other shows, too. There's Health Matters, there's the KMOX Auto Show, and there's the replay of the Baseball Writers Dinner. So, great lineup here on KMOX. Back to the phones. Jerry lives in St. Louis. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I have a question about the orchids.
Mm-hmm.
I have quite a few, and the question is about the surface roots. They're quite a mess. Some of them are like over a foot long, and they have even attached themselves to the wall. However, some of them are really green and healthy looking, and a lot of them are gray and very unsightly. And I'm just wondering if I can cut off the ones that don't look that great without hurting the plants.
Well, for the most part, I don't recommend, you know, cutting them, because what you can do, though, any of the unsightly ones, just take one of them, cut it off, and look on the inside of, you know, the root, as, you know, when you've cut it off. See if it still looks green and viable and all that other stuff, because it may just be the aging process. Just like my hair is really ugly and gray because I'm really old. So it may be something like that, as opposed to being young and aggressive with, let's say, darker color hair like I had when I was younger. But I would say, generally, I would not recommend cutting the roots. I mean, mm-hmm. climbing the wall, that's a little scary. Anything that's doing that, are they attached to the wall, or are you just kind of running up the wall?
No, it actually attached itself to the wall.
Wow, because, I mean, that's how they hold on to tree trunks and stuff like that in their native habitat. So that's something they should do, but I've never really known somebody that's kind of kept their orchids in the same place long enough for that, you know, exact same location. But anything that's climbing the wall, I'd probably cut that one off, but I would look at the ones that you're thinking that are not very good looking. My thinking is they're not dead, because, you know, you go to the botanical garden, you look at the orchids, or you go to, let's say, the Orchid Society meetings, and, you know, for the most part, when they have them for sale or anything else, when they're older and mature, they, you know, the root systems are just kind of cascading over this edge of the pots, as, you know, on the older plants.
Mm-hmm.
So they generally don't cut them.
Okay, well, I won't do that then. But just another comment, I have one plant that has bloomed 3 times on the same stalk.
Whoa!
The stalk never died, and it is now budding for the 3rd time, the same stalk.
That's fantastic, because I always tell people when they finish flowering, just cut them off. But there's been a couple other callers that, you know, with the variety of orchid that they had, they got reblooms on the same stalk.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for your advice.
Well, thanks, Jerry. And let's go now to Marthasville and into Pat's yard. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good.
My call is regarding a river birch tree that I planted about 7 years ago. And when I planted it, it was probably about 7 feet tall. Now it's pushing 25, if not maybe even 30. And my concern with it is one of the main parts of the tree has an angle that's probably about 75 degrees.
Ooh.
And then there's another limb or part of the tree that is relatively straight up and down. So
right.
My concern moving forward is that limb that's at an angle, I guess just out of sheer weight and gravity, eventually is going to tear away. Is there a good plan with that moving forward? And the two things I have in my mind is, one, should I cut it, or two, should I try and strap these two limbs together?
I would
and
say,
if I should cut it, how far down should I cut it?
Yeah, I would say, if it, you know, let's say the one that's your concern with at this angle, is it growing over your house or growing over something, or is it making it so you can't walk underneath it?
Oh, no, it's not that severe at all. When I say, let me push this backwards. It's nearly vertical, but it's off that vertical line of what would be maybe 90 degrees to about a 70 degree mark.
Okay, so that's not a problem. Yeah, I mean, that's how they naturally grow, especially if you have multiple trunks coming out of the same base. A lot of times, you know, the river birch will have three or four trunks, and each one, to get adequate light, it's going to be forced to, you know, reach in a slightly different direction than the other ones that are attached to the same, let's say, major trunk. So this is not really a problem at all. River birch are very, very tough. I don't see, you know, I'm not going to say, maybe if there was a tornado or something, it might, you know, cause the one that's leaning, but it's not even leaning that much. I thought you meant it was leaning at a 70 degree angle, not that it was.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was my fault for misunderstanding. So basically, this is how they grow. And you've got, you can anticipate another 25 to 30 feet, you know, of height with this whole thing.
So as of now, I should just let it be what it is.
Yeah, I don't think you'll probably ever have to do anything with it. I've seen some really mature ones, and some, you know, the interior of the trunks, as they, you know, continue to elongate, the inside of each trunk is probably going to have less and less branches. So most of the branches are going to be on the, you know, the exterior. But they're not really heavy duty like the leaves on a river birch versus the leaves on an oak tree. So they're not going to be that much problem, even if, you know, we have high winds when they're fully leafed out.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, you got a great tree. And the only thing I worry about with river birch is their root systems, because they're from swampy areas. The root systems are extremely aggressive and keep going and going and going. And now let's go from Marthasville over to Granite City. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Hi. How you doing?
Very good.
I like your show. Listen, the last couple of years I've planted mums in my yard and just bought them like at Home Depot. And I noticed they didn't come back. Can you tell me if they're annuals or perennials? I actually looked at one of them and saw a sticker on there that my other half left that looked like it said annual on there, so I guess it wouldn't come back.
Well, basically, there's not an annual. Usually, if you buy the mums that are fully in, let's say, in flower or fully budded, and there's no little leaflets right at the stem where the stem's coming up out of the ground, that one's not going to come back regardless of what type it is or anything else. So that's where the trouble comes, is they've kind of been pushed past being a perennial, because there is not an annual, I shouldn't say there isn't any, but there usually is not annual chrysanthemums being sold. So it's just the fact that these are, you know, been pushed for production for, you know, to be able to give you flowers for about 2 weeks or so. They're not really put, you know, or planted or let's say sold to be able to come back year after year after year. You should get them earlier in the year. Or get, if you get them later in the season, like you have been doing, look at the, you know, like I said, where the stem's coming up out of the potting mix, there should be little leaflets there. And those little leaflets kind of guarantee that you're going to have some new leaves for the following year, consequently new flowers.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. And yeah, it's a little bit iffy because we kind of think, well, these are perennials, but they're never coming back. But that's what it is. They've just been kind of accelerated as far as their growth goes. Let's go now. Let's stay in Illinois and go to Alton. And that's where Bill lives. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill. Yeah. Here, I'm raising my tomatoes in 5-gallon buckets with holes drilled in the bottom for drainage.
Mm-hmm.
But I get blossom rot. Can you tell me how to get rid of that darn blossom rot?
Yeah, basically, blossom end rot is lack of calcium in your potting mix or in your fertilizer that you're using. So are you using tomato food?
I'm using a garden variety. It says it's for gardens.
Go and get one that on the box says tomato food, because it's going to have the extra calcium that prevents this blossom end rot. But I would tell you too, you know, using the same pots over and over and over again, the blossom end rot could be inoculated into the soil a little bit. So you might think about getting some new soil before you even start using the new tomato fertilizer.
I get tomato fertilizer?
Yeah, it'll say it right on the box. Scotts makes it. You know, they have all kinds of different fertilizer, but this will say tomato fertilizer, and it will say something like with extra calcium or something along that line. But blossom end rot is just because there's not enough calcium in the growing medium.
All right. What kind of soil should I be putting in?
Use potting mix, not potting soil.
Potting mix.
Right.
Okie dokie. Thank you very much.
Yep. And now let's go to Shirley from Wentzville. Hi, Shirley.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a quick question on fungicide. I'd like to know when to start it. I had trouble with almost every plant I have of getting the black spot and the leaves turning yellow and dropping off. And I want to know if I could put it on everything.
I don't know if you need to put it on everything, but basically, as soon as the leaves are about halfway out, that's when you make your first application of the fungicide. Then you wait for, you know, another couple weeks, then it's another application of fungicide. So it's going to, you know, with these fungus circumstances, you've got to really kind of keep up with maybe three or four different applications to get it past that point. Also, allowing anything that had the black spot or any kind of fungus on it, those leaves to fall and just lay on the ground. When it rains really hard, you could be splashing it up onto the buds of these leaves, and you could be re-inoculating it that way. So keeping the areas where the plants that do have the fungus problems, you know, pretty much clean from the debris from the previous year, and especially if those leaves have had any kind of fungus spotting on them.
I try to keep them off the ground.
Yeah.
Keep it clean. Can I put that on roses, arborvitaes, rhododendron?
Well, you probably those don't really need it. Arborvitae are not going to have black spot, or they shouldn't, and rhododendrons either. So whatever's causing the problems with the foliage with them is different from the black spot that's causing, you know, let's say on roses or something along that line.
Okay. Okay, so after the first application, how long do I wait for the second one, did you say?
Probably 2 to 3 weeks, you know, and then another one. So thanks, Shirley, and thanks to everybody for, you know, calling in. I greatly appreciate it. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.
A proud partner of the 2018 100th PGA Championship at Belle Reve Country Club. KMOX, KMOX HD, St. Louis. KZK HD3, St. Louis.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier and timely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks, no cash access, and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Odyssey celebrates Father's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.